our last show here in July. I'll be back next week for August.
Flying
Patrick
by.
Dolan is flying by. Our 8th month of the year starts.
I love July. It's my favorite month.
It's not my favorite month. This might be my birthday month. It's hot.
I love this. Oh, I love the summer.
That summer's great. Give me September, though. Give me May. I guess that's more spring and fall. Skipping over like June, July, August. Yeah. June. July just gets in these later days. Like, oh, my God, it's just oppressive out here.
I don't know. I like it a lot.
Let's say hi to Mike Leonard, too, here really quickly. Mike. Hi, Mike. How are you doing, my friend?
Hi, guys. I missed the first half of the show. Was it any good without me?
It was the best half.
It was the best half. Now we bring him down a level. Yeah. How was your daughter's wedding, by the way, last week?
Oh, phenomenal. It was really awesome. Just a great time. You never know. I mean, you're going expecting it to be a great time, but it was a great time. It was a, cool moment walking her down the aisle, and a very emotional moment giving the toast, kind of broke up there. But then got it back together and finished it off. But yeah, it was just fantastic. Thanks for asking.
Did you write a script out or did you do bullet points, Mike?
John, I did more like, had a couple bullet points in mind that I wanted to say so I could keep my structure and make sure I led with those funny jokes that I tell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a couple. Got two.
When are you going to share some of those on this program? Yeah, perhaps you need some bullet points.
I haven't heard those.
Well, I could just point you to different tapes, go back historical tapes on WGN, and you'd be rolling. Maybe you weren't there those weeks, but I do want to start with something special today.
Okay.
Can I?
Yeah, please.
It's a song.
Okay. Oh,
na 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 na.
Oh.
Na 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 na.
Look at this guy.
Hey, hey, hey. Goodbye. You know what that means.
You win one game after getting swept at Wrigley, and you win the first game of a series, and you're going to bring that energy to this program, Mike Leonard?
Look at the standings.
Yeah, look at the standings for the last couple, ever since 2005, buddy.
Fellas, I think it was John Wood who said you're only as good as your last game.
Yeah, okay.
I was there. And we crushed you guys, and Comiskey, well, I still call Comiskey, much better food than Wrigley. It's not even a comparison.
I can agree with that, actually. I'm fine with that. The food is better. Yeah. I mean, the food at Wrigley's gotten a lot better in the last couple years, I will say.
It has.
But I think that they were spurned on because the Southsiders, they do their beer selections better, and they do their food selections better, without a doubt. And Wrigley has tried to catch up a little bit, but Mike, I'll give you the point on that one for sure.
But winning one game, honestly.
I was trying to give Mike Leonard a little point here, Patrick. You don't have to bring it down.
All right.
Mike, before we move on with whatever the heck you want to talk about, Mike's a federal defense attorney, by the way. We had a caller in the last segment. I was talking about your hometown, Minooka, saying that I called it Minooka or something. Iridian has pulled the clip. The guy said, listen to the tape. Well, Iridian did just that. Here's 5 seconds of me saying the town name correctly. Go ahead, Iridian. Minooka. Thanks, Iridian. She just handed me this piece of paper to remind folks about Minooka. Yeah, that's three times. That's three correct Minookas.
See? There's the evidence
right
there.
I'm not saying Minooka like Mary.
No. You say it kind of weird.
I don't think so.
No, I say it like they say it in the town.
Mike, how do you say it?
No. Minooka.
But
it sounds like you're trying to pronounce a word that you don't really know.
Wait a minute, are you emphasizing the first syllable and John's emphasizing the second syllable? Is that what you're saying?
It just sounds awkward. It's like if he was saying, I've been to Schaumburg before.
It's not what it sounds like. No, but Mike, you're emphasizing the ooh a little too much. And people that live in Minooka, they just let it roll off the tongue like Minooka. I do. They don't go Minooka like you do.
Hey, we'll let the listeners decide.
They all agree with me except for one, so there you go.
Well, that guy's right.
Okay. Mike, we were talking. I know, we got to do it on the show. Mike, you in the last hour, we were talking a little bit about what happens at work if an investigation has been started against you. And Patrick talked about, there's a need, call me as an employment lawyer. He'll help walk through certain things. But you don't have a lot of protections against you in the workplace. You can't plead the fifth if you're being investigated by your bosses. Obviously, the world of criminal law is way different. And I'd imagine, but you guys start at a similar place. If you're being investigated, someone comes to your door or tells you you're being investigated for a crime, how quickly should someone be calling their lawyer? Let's start there, Mike.
Immediately. Yeah, I mean, it's really sad because I think a lot of people kind of don't understand the game. Like the agents that are coming to your door and trying to surprise you, they're not your friends. They're not here to clear things up and to get favorable testimony from you. You know, they're there with a clear purpose, which oftentimes is to get you to say things that will corroborate or further their investigation against you or somebody else, right? And so that's just absolutely critical. And it's sad because some people make the mistake either under the assumption like, well, if I'm silent, that's going to be used against me. They're going to think I'm guilty. Who cares what they think? It's completely inadmissible if you're silent, right, or request a lawyer. It can never be used against you. It can never be brought up in court. But I think people have that feeling, and they also feel like, hey, I'm a good person. I'm a good citizen. I should cooperate with them. I should talk to them. And it's a horrible idea. And the other part of that is, you know, most of the time, those types of encounters, they're not audiotaped. They're not videotaped. There's always huge divisions about what was really said. However, law enforcement will create a report that day, that week, which gives like a summary of what they say you said, right? And sometimes they're dead wrong or very off, right? And yet you then have this document that looks legit, and at a trial, they could use that to impeach you. Well, you told Agent Johnson this or that, didn't you? And Agent Johnson will attest that that's what you said, even though there's no, you know, objective proof of it. So it's absolutely critical.
Mike, I wonder, though, I think that some people, let's say they did do something wrong, and I think that a lot of people feel like they want to kind of fess up to maybe they did X, Y, or Z, but not A, B, or C. Or, you know, maybe I wasn't right in this, but heck, you know, I didn't do what you're accusing me of. I know that that is an instinct to try and be like, well, let's just be honest with officers. You can still end up doing that after you've talked to a lawyer, right? Like, I still feel like if that's your instinct, good on you to want to fess up to something maybe you did wrong, but just work it through counsel to at least get that opinion on your side.
Oh, that's a great point. Yeah, no one's saying, hey, lie to law enforcement, never help them, don't be a good citizen. We're not saying any of that stuff, but you can make the choices you just described after having the advice of a lawyer. And if you really want to do that, and it might be against the advice of your lawyer, you can do that with your lawyer, or it can be presented or packaged for you. The lawyer can proffer that information to them without it being from you. There's many ways to handle that. So if you feel like, hey, no matter what, I'm going to say this, you still benefit from the advice of a lawyer that tell you, okay, here's how we would approach that. Here's what we should do. Not a lot of people would be telling you, yeah, go for that. But if that's what you want to do, and that's what makes you, you know, feel best about yourself, clearly you can do that, but you want to get the advice of a lawyer about how to do it.
I think one of the big differences is in the employment law setting, you want to cooperate and you want to answer the questions. But you brought up something that I think is really important because this can be a problem. So when you're done being interviewed by HR, what you should say is, are you going to write that up? And they'll say yes and say, I need to see that because I would like to make changes. Mm. And invariably, they will make changes to it because what HR wrote down is not accurate in some points.
Maliciously or just it's
no,
hard
I think
to...
It's just hard. I mean, it's hard to have a conversation and take notes and afterwards remember what was said, especially something that at times is really acrimonious because you're absolutely disputing what someone said you did. But the big difference, I think, at the beginning is you should cooperate. But Mike makes a really good point. You should also get a written statement and make changes because whatever that HR person wrote down, if you don't, that's what the company's going
to
use.
That makes sense in the workplace to be able to ask for that piece of paper. Mike, can you ask a police officer after the fact, I'd like a written copy of what I just said, please, and I want to make changes?
Well, you can make the request. Well, it depends on the circumstances. So obviously, if you're being interrogated and you're writing something out yourself or they're writing it out allegedly verbatim, of course you can do that. And they'll actually try to show it to you to try to get you to initial it to try to agree to it. But in general, that's just not going to happen. If an agent shows up at your house, they interview you, hey, sir, may I have a copy? No, I'm doing an investigation. You're not entitled to that. That's never going to happen. Did you guys touch upon the situation that happens a lot in, you know, the HR situations that Patrick's talking about, where there's also potentially criminal conduct and you're the employee, and it might not only be a violation of policy, but it could be a crime, which happens a lot. Did you guys touch upon that issue?
We mainly touched on the pronunciation of Manuka for the first hour.
Yeah, that's
but,
what we did.
We talked a little bit
We're
about
waiting people, for you.
Yeah, we did talk a little bit about people being civilly charged with something or held liable for something, but not in the criminal sphere where those two worlds kind of overlap.
Yeah, I mean, that's a different... Yeah, Mike, that's a different...
Because it, no, it happens a lot. Go ahead, Patrick. Yeah, sorry. No, sorry.
You go ahead.
This is riveting.
Okay, so, I mean, I'm sure you probably touched upon the pure investigation where there's no... It's really just a civil issue. Like, you know, Patrick deals with a million times, like, a sexual harassment investigation, age discrimination, whatever, violation of company policies. But oftentimes, there's the other type of investigation where not only is the employee's conduct potentially violative of whatever policies they have, but it could be criminal. And, you know, that might be misuse of funds. It might be bribery. It might be submission of false claims to the government, all sorts of things. And so what happens a lot of times is the individual employee is asked to cooperate with the investigation, and then the company may hire a law firm, sometimes a big law firm, who is actually representing the company. They're not looking out for the interests of Joe Schmo, who they're interviewing, right? So in those situations, Joe Schmo may strongly be in his benefit, depending upon the nature of the investigation, to have counsel present for that. And if there are criminal implications, most companies will say, yeah, number one, we have to advise you that you have the right to have your own attorneys. We represent the company. We don't represent you, right? Because sometimes people are under the misperception that these company lawyers actually are looking out for them, too, and they're not. And sometimes they may use admissions made by employees to give to the government to say, hey, look, here's what we did. We're giving you the fruits of our investigation. We're falling on the sword. You know, you can fine us or take action against us, but we're really not the bad guy. We really didn't know. But here's the information we got, including against Joe Schmo, which then could be used for a criminal charge against Joe Schmo. So you got to be real careful there.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, Mike. And we touched upon it, but I think we should emphasize that. So when we talk about do you have a right to counsel during that internal investigation, if you're facing criminal conduct, of course you do. And that's a really good point. If it's just potential liability under, you know, a federal or state law with regard to harassment or something like that, probably not. Should you anyway, or should you request it? Probably. But if there's any possibility of criminal involvement, then you absolutely must, and you should not cooperate. And just as an additional point, oftentimes, and I wonder if there's an analogy under the criminal situation, oftentimes someone will come to me and say, I don't want to participate in this investigation. Why? Because I did it. Okay, that's fine. We're not going to participate, but now we're going to pivot very carefully to you separating from the company. And it's not maybe because you did it. It's because you don't want to go through the investigation and have all this stuff focused on you. And whether it comes out favorably or not, no one is going to think you're innocent at the end. So when people say to me, you know what, I did this, and I said, well, let's just think about how to get you out. So maybe you can focus on what to do next. You know, that's something to think about, too. Not everybody has to go through it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. The problem for the employee is if you don't cooperate in the investigation,
you're going
to
get fired.
Use that as a basis to fire you. However, if you know from talking to counsel that, look, you know, you're better off not getting criminally charged because you participate in the investigation and you give them this long statement that implicates you, and then they can turn that over to the government, well, that's not getting prosecuted is probably the way above not getting fired. So like
right.
you said, it'd be mm-hmm. a good idea, you know,
right.
extricate yourself by separation. There's no adverse inferences against you, and then get the advice of counsel. The other thing that comes up a lot is that there might be a civil subpoena, like, for instance, a civil investigative demand to a company to produce documents. And it might be like a whistleblower false claims case that's under seal or they're investigating. That, even though it's from a civil agency like the Attorney General's Office or Civil Office of the U.S. Attorneys, that could still be a criminal case. So you also have to be careful because just the company tells you, oh, don't worry, it's just a civil matter. No, it also could be used for a basis for criminal charges.
Mike, I want to ask you here before we got to take a break and then the news, 312-981-7200 is our phone number for your thoughts and questions. I think, again, we talked about at the beginning, if the police are chatting with you, you want to cooperate. I think a lot of us respect the work that is done by the officers, even well recognizing that if you say too much, it could be used against you, but still err on the side of, well, let's help these guys out. Or, you know, I didn't do anything wrong, or I didn't do that much wrong. Mike, what is a respectful way to thread the line? I mean, what are the words that you say? I'd like my lawyer present. I appreciate the work you're doing, but I'm just not going to say anymore? Like, how should we say that out loud?
Yeah, and just think about it. Like, I know we all think we want to be good people, good citizens. We have to, you know, say things in a certain way. Law enforcement gets it more than anybody, okay? They get told more than anybody, hey, I'd like to talk to you, but I'm not going to do so without my counsel present. You know, I want my counsel present. They understand what that means. They hear it all the time. So nobody's offended at the state or federal level by someone saying, I want my attorney. They would expect you to say that. If you don't say that, they will think sometimes you're a sucker. Like, oh, this is awesome. This person's going to give us a statement without counsel. So there's no magic words other than to clearly state, I'm not going to answer questions without my attorney present. I need my attorney present. I need it. I'm demanding an attorney. All questioning, therefore, then should stop. Otherwise, it's unconstitutional. But they get it. They're not offended. They understand what's going on. They hear it all the time. They're not shocked. Like, oh, I can't believe this guy wants a lawyer. It happens every day.
Do that furthering questioning, I mean, does it happen sometimes where they try and say, okay, yeah, we'll get the lawyer here as soon as we can, or, you know, maybe that. But let's just a couple other follow-ups here really quickly. I mean, or is that really supposed to be the end of the line of the conversation?
100%. When you say you verbalize that you want, you know, you want counsel, or you're demanding to talk to counsel, or you don't want to proceed until counsel, all questioning constitutionally are supposed to stop. Does it? No. Okay. All the time. They're going to say, well, you know, it's just a few questions, or we can help you. We think we can work this out, or maybe there's misunderstanding, or this could be good for you. This is an opportunity for you. You know, we can really talk to the prosecutors on your behalf. You're only going to get one chance. All sorts of tactics, right? Even though we really should have stopped and are required to stop. It doesn't always happen. I'm not saying all officers
right.
do that, but a lot of people will try more, and a lot of people will then decide they'll start talking. And so once you then start talking in response to that, you have then, you know, reopened the door, so to speak. So you're now doing it, right?
So you're not constitutionally protected anymore once you start answering questions again? Let's pause on that thought. I got to take this commercial break and get to the news on time. Mike, I want to ask you that again after the break in the news on WGN. John Hansen here. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Patrick Dolan, did you break the headphones there? You got to pay for them.
I fixed them. Really quickly.
Dropped them right before we...
a little bit of a moment there.
Sure. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Mike Leonard on the other end of things on the line. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, guys, it was a long break. Do you want me to sing that White Sox song again?
Oh, man.
Federal defense attorney. I turned off his mic just in case. About to turn it back on. Let's see if he's singing it. Nope. Okay, good.
Here we go.
Mike, before the break, we talked about asking for a lawyer immediately when questioning would begin from law enforcement, or if they're going to ask you some questions, just to politely, respectfully say, I'm not going to answer any more questions till I have a lawyer. Doesn't mean you're guilty. Doesn't mean you're a bad person. Doesn't mean you don't respect law enforcement. You can do all three of those things. You can be the most respectful person and just say, look, I just need a lawyer. Then you said, and I agreed, or I kind of teed you up for this, that, you know, police officers in their role, they're supposed to not say anything after that point, but maybe they try and poke a little bit, or, you know, are you sure? Like, maybe we could just ask a couple things here. We don't know if you're going to get in trouble here. We're just trying to help you on out here. You know, they're trying to get more information out of you. And then you said something that I was surprised about, that if you then start participating in a line of questions, that is admissible in court. I always thought that once you said you need a lawyer, at that point, anything else you say would be thrown out by any judge. Are you saying that if you voluntarily start to participate because their little egging on worked, that now you have voluntarily given those answers and it's all admissible?
Possibly. So it's not always so neat, right? But as soon as you invoke the right to counsel, then constitutionally, all questioning should stop. Does it always happen? No. So, like I said, they might take another run at you. They might say something else. You might say something else, right? You might sort of re-engage them, okay? Now, you know, a clever or smart or savvy investigator, agent, police officer, whoever we're talking about, if they're smart, they would try to say, hey, you know, you sure you want to talk to us? I know you said something about lawyer. You still want to go ahead and talk about this? If they don't do that, they're putting themselves in trouble, and you're going to have a good motion to suppress that evidence, right? Because once you invoke, then all questioning should cease. But sometimes the person will then start talking, right? And so, or they'll say something, it'll prompt you to start talking. So it's not perfect. It's not, there's some nuance here, right? And so a good agent investigator will try to, you know, recommit you to the fact that you do want to make statements, okay? And then you've re-engaged, you then waived your rights. You can still re-invoke your right to counsel as you go forward. But that's what happens a lot, where people sort of say they want a lawyer, but then they'll start talking and start giving information, or they'll respond to something, and the agents will, you know, do something to make sure that, okay, you're really okay to go ahead here. You know what I mean? So it's not always clean and crisp, but you said something at the beginning that the person should say, I don't want to answer any more questions. I hope they haven't answered any at all, other than possibly giving their name, right? But, it's always a nuanced interaction, but clearly, if they go ahead and ask further questions after you invoked, you're going to have a real good basis for a motion to quash that statement, to suppress it, so that evidence will be excluded.
Does it matter to a judge when they're ruling on the motion to suppress whether the person volunteered or just started talking, you know, versus the investigator saying, you know what, are you sure? Geez, someone in your situation, I think you just want to get it off your chest or something like that, versus the, you know, the investigator after hearing that statement sort of sitting there, and the person's like, you know, and just doesn't like the silence. So they just start talking. They initiate it. Does that make a difference?
Oh, a huge difference. Yeah. Because if they invoked and then there was no further questioning, but then all of a sudden the person wants to, hey, let me start spilling my guts, then there's a great likelihood that that's going to be admissible. So, and that happens too. You know, again, it's not all crisp and clean, but that would certainly be a situation where you're putting yourself in danger of absolutely those statements being admissible and used against you.
Let's go to the phone lines. Will has a thought. Hi, Will. You're on WGN.
I've got a question for the attorney.
Yes, sir.
When you're cross-examining a witness at a trial, how much is completely like pre-planned as opposed to kind of winging it and reacting on your feet?
Ooh, that's a good one. Like to what they testified, and you're like, ooh, I want to make sure I get that. Yeah, Mike, how much do you know you're going to say, and how much do you kind of make up on the spot depending on how the testimony went the first round?
Well, it's a great question because it's sort of the art and science of cross-examination that we could talk about for days. If you want to have me on for days, it would be great.
No.
But in any event, I know that's not going to happen. Going into the trial, obviously you have to have a clear idea of what you expect each witness to say. So your structure, and from my standpoint, your structure is going to be, you have all these sort of sections. Some people call them chapters, whatever you want to call them, but, you know, headliners. These subjects, you know that it's important for you to you know, confront the witness on and cover those things, right? And then within those chapters, headings, whatever we're going to call them, you know, either bullet points that, you know, cue you to words, that cue you to what you're going to ask about, or the actual thing written out. I think it's not super effective to have them written out because you're not going to be able to do that on the spot, you know? So it's more like bullet points that prompt you to ask a series of questions under that heading. However, so you have this great structure in mind. You have documents that you may use to impeach them, meaning if they say something during their testimony, you're going to use it to show that they're not telling the truth. But all sorts of stuff happens at trial. You have this preconceived idea of how the witness is going to come across, what they're going to say, and sometimes it's markedly different than what you anticipate. So you might move a section up right to the front. You might go after something that they said that you didn't anticipate and move it all the way up to the front. They might have made some great admission that, therefore, you're not going to cover something because you've got that and you don't want to ruin it, right? So I think it's both. You have to have the structure. You have to have the preparation. But there's an awful lot of times where you have to maneuver on your feet. It's not where you're standing there. It's like while you're listening to their direct examination and rejiggering what you want to do and how you want to do it. Sometimes you think you're going to be a hardcore heavyweight on the person, and then you see how they testified, and you see that they're soft, or what they said didn't harm you so much, and you're going to take a different sort of demeanor with them. So it's kind of, that's what makes it fun. It's always nuanced. It's always an adjustment at trial. It's always an adjustment to how the witness actually performed and what they actually said versus what you anticipated them saying.
Yeah, Mike, you just remind me of a deposition I was in. I was taking the deposition of a CEO who'd been claimed to have engaged in harassment. And the deposition went on, and I had my outline, as you just talked about, but you have to do a lot of listening. You can't just look at your outline because you have to go down different paths. And I noticed that his lawyer, after several hours, seemed really bored and his attention was elsewhere. So I decided I would cut to the end where all the good stuff was because he didn't seem to be paying attention. And then I just laid on these questions, and he was surprised. The lawyer was, I think he was reading a newspaper. He was not even paying attention. And I just asked him the same question 10 times and got the answer I needed. And that was the end of the deposition.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I think.
So you not only read the room, like Mike has to read the jurors in a way too, and the vibe of the room, but you were able to read that maybe the lawyer.
Oh, yeah. If you're in a deposition for hours on end, Mike knows this, you know, there's a fatigue factor, which I just love to play on. Ooh. And the lawyers, you know, they just get bored and tired. And I'm like, man, that's when you really feast.
That's clever. Mike, I wanted to ask you, because, you know, I'm obviously not a lawyer, but in some ways our jobs can be kind of similar. I feel like reading the room or like knowing an audience is a lot what we do as radio hosts, even though we don't have a live audience in front of us. You use the text line, the vibe, the feel of how a segment's going. At the Blackhawks game, feel like I can sense when a game we're playing is either falling flat or maybe it's going great and I want to extend it in a certain way, right? And you adjust on the fly. Mike, obviously the courtroom is mostly silent, but do you feel like you have a good sense of when you have the jury or when you don't and you need to change up your tactics?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can sometimes see as you're watching that direct examination that you're getting killed or you're getting harmed in a way that you didn't anticipate or to a greater extent. You know, like you're like looking at this jury and you can tell they're eating this stuff up, or the witnesses just come across as highly credible or different than what you expected. So, yeah, sometimes you might have to change it up using your voice, you know, going to some drama first or coming up, you know, maybe had some things that you were going to confront with that kind of impeach them, you might move that up to the very front to give the jury some reason to think, okay, well, you know, Leonard just pointed out a couple things right at the beginning of this cross that makes me look at this witness's testimony, the witness, a little bit differently, you know, kind of poisons the well, and that may open the door to, you know, making some progress on some other points. So, yeah, it is certainly reading the room, and, you know, why then, John, do you treat me and Patrick so poorly if you're supposed to be so good at reading the room?
That's a good one. On TV, I feel like the lawyers will approach the jury box during questioning or something like that. Do you have that leeway in a courtroom to kind of block out and move around to change the angle, just to give people something fresh to look at differently to keep them awake during certain moments, literally?
Well, it depends on the judge. Depends on the judge in the courtroom. Some judges are like, hey, you are going to cross counsel from that podium. You will not be back there. You will not be over there. You will be right there. I had a federal court case in St. Louis. Literally, we couldn't move from the podium. And the funny thing was, I was trying to stand my body a little to the left of the podium just to get away from the podium. And you could tell the judge was getting hot just from that.
Wow.
Like as if I was like, he was about, you know, he never did, but you could just tell. Like, and then other judges give you very much the room, right? With some exceptions, like, hey, we don't want you like 2 feet from the jury box, you know.
Jumping on top of it on the wall, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, but a lot of judges, and I think a lot of the good ones and a lot of the experienced ones, will give you a lot of latitude within the room, you know. So, and there is obviously an element of theater and art and creativity to it. And of course, where you stand does matter to me, and especially on cross, you're supposed to be the show. When you're doing a direct examination of witness, you want to get the jurors' attention all on them, right? When you do a cross, the idea is to get the attention on you and what you're saying, because you're really, in a way, not really asking questions. You're really making statements on cross that they have to say yes or no to. So you want the attention to be on you, which is hard for me because I don't like attention. So that's why I don't like cross.
Yeah, right. Great insight there. I love that, the judge telling you to stay at your podium. It's like when I remind you guys, talk into the microphones. Right. And then sneeze out of the microphones. I can be a little unruly in that regard, too. Hey, we got to take a quick break. 312-981-7200. Get some questions in for these guys. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Patrick Dolan is in chair number 2. He is an employment lawyer of Conti and Dolan. 312-332-7800 is how you can reach him. Mike Leonard joining us via the phone. He's a federal defense attorney, also helps out with the whistleblower cases. Mike, the number people should reach for you is?
312-380-6559. And can I give a shout-out to a first-time listener?
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
Well, just guess, because who's the least likely to listen to me on the radio?
Your wife.
Exactly. Exactly.
That was easy.
I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to say any judge in America, but behind that category, it's my wife.
Has she never listened to a program? This is the first one.
No, I'm kidding. I think she's listened here and there. But can you imagine hearing me all day and then you're going to get on the radio and listen?
Yeah, that'd be awful.
I think that's unlikely.
Yeah, and that's why people wonder if Enrique listens all the time.
No,
not so much.
Not so much, yeah.
When we first got together, oh, yeah, overnights all the time. Yeah, now it's like, well, what did you say on the radio? I don't know. I wasn't listening.
Right.
I'd be like, that's wasn't right. that segment with I was not listening. Especially now with the kid, too. He's like, I'm taking care of the child.
Yeah.
And he does not want to listen to you.
No, he doesn't.
Any more than he has to. 312-9170-200 if you have a quick other question to come in. Patrick, we were talking about cross-examinations, and I kept on cutting you off. Any other thoughts on that realm of things?
No, I was just thinking during the breakdown when you were talking about sort of reading the room and how important it is that we're lucky that we get to, you know, work with people and figure out what they need and sort of, you know, look at them, talk to them, understand them. And I think that's really fun. It's a fun part of our job, and it's an interesting part of our job, and a lot of it is working with people who are, you know, in a good place, a bad place, and I think that's a great part of our job.
You know, Mike, when you said that you really enjoy the creative part of being a lawyer, I could maybe hear, some people might hear that and say, well, you're defending people that really, you know, are in the worst days of their lives, and you're talking about how fun it is to be a lawyer, and some people might see that as a juxtaposition that isn't good. Whereas if I've got someone I've hired, I want them enjoying their job, loving their gig, and doing whatever it takes. And if that means that they have fun while they're doing it, while defending me through the most serious moments of my life, that's someone I want working for me, Mike. I feel the same way about someone that comes and fixes up my house. I like when they put on loud music if they're down in the basement working on something. Like, I hope I am employing people that are loving their life and their job, even if it's not the most pleasant moment for me.
Oh, yeah, and by fun, it doesn't mean I'm laughing. It just means to me, I get great joy and take great pride in doing it, right? And especially on behalf of individuals. And I agree with Patrick. It is a different level of satisfaction working with an individual than representing, say, for instance, a company where the expectation might be, well, we should have won anyway, right? And so it's just a different dynamic, and it's much more personal to you and to them, and there's much more of a relationship.
Yeah, you don't have to be like Billy Flynn in Chicago. The musical is what I'm referencing, but I want you to be, I don't want you literally tap dancing out there, but I want you, you know, metaphorically lawyer tap dancing out there for me.
Yeah, I was in court the other day, and the lawyer on the other side was so miserable and unhappy and just complained at the entire elevator route down, you know, the Daily Center. I just couldn't wait to get away from him quickly enough. I mean, like, man, you should be doing something else.
It wasn't Mike, though.
Yeah, I think it was, actually, but I wasn't going to name his name.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope that your client would feel that you're enthusiastically engaged in the battle for them. If they don't feel like that, that's a problem.
I love that way you put that battle. Mike, since the very first day we met, we said earlier it was our fourth anniversary of this show this week or last week, basically this month, and you've been on since nearly the beginning, and the very first impression I got from Mike Leonard was, ooh, this guy hates the man, whoever quote-unquote the man is, and wants nothing more than to beat them. And
he brings good sandwiches.
And he brings good sandwiches when he's here, and he remembers to pick them up. Mike Leonard, we got to go. We'll talk to you soon, I hope, my friend, okay?
Hey, buddy. Thanks for having me on. Have a good weekend, guys.
Federal Defense Attorney Leonard, Trial Lawyers, 312-380-6559. Patrick, who should be reaching out to you?
Anybody with a workplace issue, give me a call at 312-332-7800 or email pdolan@contidolanlaw.com.
pdolan@contidolanlaw.com, 312-332-7800. That's how you can reach Karen for her family
That's
law
right.
stuff, too, right?
Same number.
And are you going on her show anytime soon and
I
cheating
am.
On us?
Yeah, I wouldn't put it that way, but yes, I am going on her show.
All right, we look forward to that on an upcoming Sunday.
Thanks,
and
Sean.
You'll be back here, of course, as well.
Take care.
That'll do it for us today. News next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.